Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You want your insurance agent to look out for you. You want the best insurance, the best price that fits your budget, but also that you're covered. I don't care whether it happens to be personal insurance, commercial insurance, whatever it happens to be. You want a great relationship with your insurance agent. That's Purdy Insurance. Real pros that care. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Speaking of real pros that care, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
0-1 to Charlie. Swung on a high fly ball to deep left field to Dodger Benfanti. Did you believe a home run? And the Dodgers have clinched the division and will celebrate on schedule.
That is the final swing in Dodger Stadium for a game being announced by Vin Scully. A walk-off home run. You're going to hear a lot of tributes to him, and justifiably so, because 1 week from today, all of us in the play-by-play business will ascend one notch on the ladder because he's retired. In the recent edition of GQ magazine, Keith Olbermann wrote an article about Vin Scully, which was very thoughtful, personable. Yeah. You know, that Scully, like any human being, can get those moments where he's not happy about something. For example, they were doing something on TV, and it was, you know, something the TV producers come up with because they are idle on time. And he said, you know, you'd think after 50 years, you know, they at least would ask my opinion of it. Well, he's right about that. I remember it's one of the things that always irked Joe Paterno about Jim Delaney. And he said to me many times, he said, Steve, they never asked me anything. He said, you'd think after how many ever years it was at that particular time, he said, they at least ask my opinion about what I thought about it. I've sort of seen a lot of things. Well, here's one story that was related by Keith Olbermann in his article about Vin Scully. And I guess in Los Angeles, it's a pretty legendary story. Vin's up in the booth getting ready for a game. And, of course, tonight we will all be inundated with political commentators. This is their Super Bowl and their night. Well, this person, nameless, evidently at the time was a big-name political commentator. And he wanted to meet Vin Scully, and he relayed that message to the Dodgers. And they set it up, and they get him up into the booth. So, finally, Scully walks in, and this political commentator says, you know what? Says, I always love wherever I go to meet the person that is number one in what they do. You want to know why? Because I'm number one in what I do. So these are people I can relate to. People who are number one in what they do because I'm number one in what I do. And he's going on and on about his accomplishments and what he's done. And Vin Scully very politely is listening to all this. And finally, in a break where at some point this man had to take a breath, Scully sees the opening. He said, well, it's great to have you here. You know, I'd like you to meet Susan over here. She's the number one floor manager. Right? And he makes him shake Susan's hand. He said, this is Antonio back here. Antonio is the number one cameraman going. In fact, he's on camera number one tonight. And uncomfortably, he makes him shake his hand. And this is Bobby over here. He's the number one statistician in all of sports. He says, he makes him, and he did this like with seven or eight different people in the booth. This is Mike, number one audio guy. And finally, this man says, well, it was great seeing all of you. I've got to go. And leaves. Now, if you didn't respect Vin Scully more after that story, right, you can't do any of this, TV, radio. For example, this show isn't anywhere near as, whatever, however good you think this show is, it's nowhere close to where it can, unless we have Sean. And before that, Kevin. This is not. I don't have Sean. The odds of this show being any good fall exponentially. You don't have Roger, the show doesn't, or Drew. We do football on Saturdays, a Jack Ham, a Derek Williams, Jeff Tarman, invaluable, Roger Corey. Nothing great happens unless there's some sort of collaboration where you work together. That's why I love team sports so much. You know, it doesn't happen unless you've got, you know, never be afraid in your lifetime. And this is mostly my message to young people, and I tell them this all the time. Never be afraid to work with somebody who makes you better. This is Antonio. Antonio's the number one camera guy out there. In fact, he's running camera number one tonight. In other words, I don't care who you are, okay? Okay? These people are great at what they do. And you're lucky to meet them and not the other way around. Vin Scully. All right, let's bring in Matt Leon. Always lucky to be around him. Matt, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Always glad to be with you.
What did we witness yesterday?
Still trying to figure that out, really, Steve. It was impressive. It was domination of a very good Steelers team. I mean, if you would have asked me before the game, I would have said I thought the Steelers would win. It wouldn't have shocked me if the Eagles won, but your thought process is the Eagles would win something like 27-24, 31-28. You never, in, at least in my opinion, 34-3 wasn't even in the discussion. And the whole game, I kept waiting for a punchback from the Steelers. I kept waiting for, here comes the run. They're going to score quick and put the pressure on. It just never came. And it never came because the Eagles wouldn't let it come. It was really, really impressive. And I think it's kind of changed the way that Philadelphia fans are thinking about what they have with this football team.
The Carson Wentz influence on this. When the offense is out there, the defense for the Eagles, they watch him. They watch him. What kind of unifier has this kid been for everybody?
It's really amazing. And you go back to the idea that this is a kid that got the starting job, what, 8 days before the season started? I mean, this isn't, you know, it might be a little easier to, I don't want to say understand, but a little more logical, for lack of a better word, had he been drafted number two overall, and then immediately they say, you know, barring anything, we're looking at him being the starter. But for, you know, the entire OTAs, most of training, all of training camp, right up until that last week of the preseason, everyone figured he was going to be the number three, and everyone was moving forward with the idea that Bradford would be the starter. And, you know, you're talking in 3 weeks that all of this has happened. And it's true, like, you know, Doug Peterson said it today, the day after the game news conference. He admitted that when he first said that Wentz was going to be the starter, he got a couple of guys raised an eyebrow at him. And you can understand that in the veteran locker room. He said, you don't want to see that now. You see guys believe what he is, they're buying what he is selling. They believe in him. I think they believe in him because, obviously, the results on the field. But he's also putting in the work, and I think that impresses guys. And it all kind of works in tandem together. But it's really been something to see.
What kind of confidence are you sensing from them? I mean, look, there's still 13 to go in the season. But what kind of confidence are you sensing in them now that they've had some results?
It's grown every week. I mean, you know, the first week I think was fun, but I think even the players kind of knew that they faced a team with issues in Cleveland. And then the second game, you know, they go on the road, national spotlight, and they're impressive again. But as it turns out, you know, the Bears are a step above the Browns. But after yesterday, I think you get the feeling of a team that feels like they kind of have turned the corner and really found something. And I think also a lot of guys, specifically on defense, while they've added, you know, some guys, most of these guys were here last year. Most of these key guys, they were just tragically miscast in a 3-4 Billy Davis, Chip Kelly defense that played 90 plays a game.
Right.
So I think you have a lot of guys that probably have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder that know the last couple of years in Philadelphia they haven't been put in the best situations to succeed, and now they are, not just from a scheme standpoint, but from playing a rational amount of plays, and they can really do what they do best. I think that's done a lot for the confidence as well.
Something else that's interesting to me about the offense is the use of Darren Sproles. I felt that Chip Kelly did not understand all that we've watched over the end, but everything that Sproles did, for example, with the Saints, what an impossible matchup he was in the open field for linebackers and so forth. I always kind of felt he was an afterthought. Do you feel like Doug Peterson has a better handle on what Sproles actually means to the offense, and so does Wentz?
I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I absolutely agree with you. One of the things you saw watching most of Chip Kelly's tenure is you would just wonder why they would underutilize Sproles. He would go stretches of games where he wouldn't even be out there getting any meaningful touches. But then you would listen to Chip Kelly talk during the week, and he would talk about how Sproles is the only guy on the offense who other teams have to game plan for, and we understand that. And it was just, like many things with Chip Kelly, it just didn't mesh. It just, what was said during the week just didn't match up with what you saw on the field. I think it's pretty obvious that Doug Peterson sees what he has in him. Doug Peterson has been very liberal in his use of the running backs. I mean, you've seen all four of them. He didn't see much of Ryan Matthews. He hurt his ankle, or had been dealing with an ankle injury and only got a couple of snaps early. But you see the rookie Wendell Smallwood, and you see Kenyon Barner. But you see them playing to Sproles' strength. And, you know, it's amazing at his age and the number of snaps he has in his career that he is still the matchup nightmare that he is. But I agree with you. That was one of the many befuddling things of the Chip Kelly experience, was the lack of use of Darren Sproles, knowing what he can do to a defense like you saw yesterday.
One of the keys with finishing where the Eagles finished last year is you get a really good schedule out of it. Because that's how they weighed it. You finish in first, you get a first-place schedule. They get a bye week. The way they're playing right now... Is the bye week misplaced for them?
Oh, I said tongue in cheek on Twitter that they should petition the NFL to flex out of the bye week, because I think you want to keep this going as long as you can. You know, they have a couple of guys that they hope to get back after the bye,
sure.
The Leotis McKelvin, Zach Ertz, so it'll be a positive from that standpoint. But you know. Follow this long enough, you know, as much as it looks like they are rolling downhill, it's very fragile. And all of a sudden, all that momentum can get out of whack, and something that was clicking is all of a sudden misfiring a little bit. And, you know, you'd like to keep it rolling. But, you know, it is what it is, and we'll see as they get ready for Detroit next week. I think, if anything, it's probably, in all seriousness, good for the fan base. They get a couple of weeks to just kind of paste in this and just kind of enjoy it and, you know, not quite worry about the other shoe dropping at least right away, and they get to have some fun with their friends that are Steelers fans.
Well, they got to be loving it in Philadelphia. The mood there must be good.
Oh, and I've had many people, Tammy, coming out of the links, just talk about the utter joy that people had coming out of the game yesterday, just celebrating and singing. Just it was really something. And you know as well as I do, runs like this and performances like this and starts like this are the most fun when they're completely unexpected. Like when there's no pressure of expectation, and it's just you're not worrying so much about the next matchup and what about this, and if they don't win at least one playoff game this time, the coach should be fired. You know, it's just fun because it's completely unexpected, and you're just kind of taking it week to week. It doesn't last long, even when it's good. Yeah. So, you know, you just kind of enjoy moments like this.
Hey, Matt, terrific stuff. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. What is targeting next on News Radio 1070 WKOK?
Imagine feeling the raw power of a 400-horsepower twin-turbo V6 and match that with all-wheel drive and the ultimate in comfort and technology. Experience the zen-like feeling for yourself. Stop by our showroom and experience this incredible American luxury vehicle, the new 2017 Lincoln MKZ. It's more than a car, it's an experience. Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury is waiting for you to come and experience the complete lineup of Lincoln luxury vehicles. Sunbury Motors is making that luxury an affordable reality with 0% financing for 60 months and $1,000 cash back on 2016 Lincoln MKX, and 0% financing for 60 months and $3,500 cash back on 2016 MKZ hybrids. Comfort, performance, style, and luxury are all made affordable at the Susquehanna Valley's home for affordable American luxury, Sunbury Motors Lincoln. Check out our inventory online at sunburylincoln.com or visit us today in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury.
I think as all of you know, in listening to the broadcast, that Jack Ham and I were completely taken aback that Brandon Smith was thrown out of the game. But this has been a long-standing issue I've had with this particular call. What I think, and what the replay people think, more often than not, are two different things. Last year, Michigan's playing Michigan State. So again, this is not a Michigan thing here, people. Not, don't get into this, it's a Michigan thing. That's not right. Michigan's playing Michigan State last year, and one of the Michigan State players pushes the Michigan player, goes into the Michigan State player. They called the Michigan kid for targeting and threw him out. There's no way in the planet that's targeting. But they threw him out. I'm watching a bowl game. I think it was the Foster Farms Bowl last year. UCLA was playing Nebraska. Nebraska kid earlier in the year had been thrown out for targeting. Well, he made this really high tackle up around the shoulder pads, but did not impact the helmet at all. So they said, personal foul, targeting. So I watched the replay, and the first thing I think is, there's no way they're throwing him. I said, that's a fine. There's nothing wrong with that tackle. This is me. Tossed him. I'm sitting there. Remember, I made it. In fact, Sean, I made it. You weren't co-hosting the show then, but I made a big deal out of this that week. I talked about that specific. I remember like it was yesterday talking about it because I just thought it was absurd. Now I'm watching this. And there's no question that Brandon Smith, I mean, you have to be completely out of focus to not see he's going for the football trying to make an interception, which he's entitled to do. Now, does he make contact with Perry's head? Yes. Yes, he does. They did remove the word intent from the rule. So the word intent is no longer in the rule. The back judge is the one that threw the flag. I can understand why he threw the flag. Because from his vantage point, he's blocked completely by Perry. And he sees Smith fly across. And he sees Perry's head go, boom, hard left to right. That's because Perry did get hit. He did get hit in the head. But that's why you have the replay official. What are they doing? Now, I understand why this is being done. Yeah, I know it's being done for safety and protection and head injuries and da-da-da-da. Hey, but let's be real here. There have been 36 lawsuits now filed in the past year. And you know what all 36 have in common, Sean? all 36 name the NCAA, and all 36 name the conference they're played in. Now, not everyone has the school they played in the lawsuit, because some states have protections built in where you can't sue the school. So some they include the school, most they don't. But every single one of them says they're suing the NCAA, and every single one of them says they're suing the conference they played in. So you don't think the legal department is sitting there at some point saying, hey, guys, you know, because Perry was so severely wounded by this, did you notice that they didn't put him in concussion protocol and he stayed in the game right away?
I completely forgot one shot and you're out. Just, I think maybe just because of the fact of the NFL with the referees saying, okay, that's your first penalty, next one you're out. Maybe I just got used to hearing that so many times the first couple of weeks of the season. I completely forgot one and done in college. And
he can't play the first half of this week's game.
Yeah, the replay shot aiming toward the end zone, you could completely see shoulder first without a doubt.
Now, does he hit him in the helmet? Yes. So black and white, yes. But is he going for the interception? What if he picked the ball off? If he actually picked the ball off, would they have still called him on the replay for targeting? I don't mean the official. The back judge can't see. All he sees is the head going left to right. And so I can understand why he threw the flag. Okay, so that's not part of this argument. To me, this lies on the shoulders of the replay official. Where's the common sense? And like I said, one after another, I keep watching and I keep getting wrong.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Reason? They find you the best insurance at the best price. I don't care if it's personal insurance. I don't care if it's homeowners, commercial business. They take care of all of it. Oh, by the way, there's a claim they act like it happened to them. You want your insurance agent to care about you, have that personal one-to-one. Purdy Insurance is all that and more. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Okay. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. And the usual candidates are certainly there. We're going to go with Odell Beckham. Ben McAdoo, the head coach of the Giants, says he needs to control his emotions better. Yeah, he slammed his helmet against the kicking net. He was prancing up and down the sideline. He was ranting and raving at nobody in particular. And Ben McAdoo says he needs to become less of a distraction and needs to focus more on winning football games. Good for you. You're the coach. You're in charge. Good. You know, yesterday was a day of absolute tragedy in sports. I appreciate the desire for people to win, but Jose Fernandez, the tragedy that happened with him is at 24, should give everything more perspective. The long life that Arnold Palmer lived and then passing yesterday should give you more perspective. Odell Beckham Jr. needs more perspective. Time now for Penn State football perspective. We bring in Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Donnie, it is always great to have you with us. I did not see anything myself, Donnie, that changed my opinion on any part of the Michigan football team that I haven't already explained on this show and in speaking engagements all summer as to where I think they're strong and where they're not. What about you?
Exactly. I almost had the score peg. It was they're an unbelievable football team. There's you know, you go back and you know, when you're preparing for a game, I'm sure you do it, you watch the opponent a couple of times, mm-hmm. you know, see him against different opponents, and they just do whatever they want. And that's the sign of a great football team. I mean, when you're not adjusting to the other team's scheme, you're just going out there and playing your brand of football. And they're going to dominate not just Penn State, but pretty much everybody up front, both sides of the line. You know, they're dominant in the trenches. They can run the ball down your throats if they want. State's a good enough quarterback, those three receivers, certainly good enough receivers to dominate a game. And if, once they get Jordan Lewis and they take away half a field, which he really did for them on defense, they're really good. If there's they're ranked number four in the country, if there's three better teams than them, I want to see them.
All right. Now, in watching Penn State, look, we know how young they are, but in watching Penn State, what did you see?
It's a team that has a long way to go. And, you know, for as much playing time as these guys have gotten, you can't match the experience of playing a team like Michigan or Ohio State or, you know, even Michigan State last year. And Penn State hasn't looked good in those games. They've been just mauled in those games. But you know, there are some, you know, Barkley could play against anybody. And that certainly appeared to be the case on Saturday. But in the trenches, which is where football games are won. I mean, let's face it, teams that are very rarely do you have a bad team that's really good on the offensive and defensive line. And, you know, Penn State has a way to go on both sides of the ball. They really do. I mean, on offense, all their good young, you know, linemen aren't capable of competing in a game like that against a Michigan team that's really experienced up front, and you know, ditto on the defensive line where they're still really young. So that part of it isn't surprising. But you have to go through games like that if you're Penn State to get where Michigan is. And people forget, you know, Michigan only won six games a couple of years ago with these players.
Right.
So it does take a while to get there. So I'm not at all surprised by what happened on Saturday. But I think Penn State might show a little better than that. Yeah, just because they played in some games, you know, against teams like that. But I'm not sure I've seen a team that the James Franklin Penn State teams have played that's been better and deeper than the Michigan team was.
Which then brings us to Minnesota. Give me the importance of this. I mean, it'll be the next one on the schedule and so forth. But you got the next three games here. So in a lot of ways, is this the tone setter?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, you look at the schedule, and for 4 weeks, the games everybody wants to talk about are Pitt and Michigan.
Right.
But the important game was Temple. That's the game you absolutely couldn't lose. You have to beat Temple, especially after what happened last year. And then you look at it on a grand scheme, the whole schedule. You know, Michigan's their big opponent, and Ohio State, Michigan State. But really, the games are going to determine what kind of season you have. Or the next two. I mean, you know, Minnesota and Maryland. If they don't show up and play hard, play well, you know, they'll play hard. But if they don't play well against Minnesota and Maryland in the next 2 weeks, they're going to struggle to be bowl eligible. But that said, if they play well, then you're looking, hey, 4-2, got some momentum going to the bye week, which Penn State could really use. And you know, you come out of that game healthy, that bye week healthy. Then you see if you've made some improvement as the season's gone on. I think this team is still poised to win seven games. There's nothing that's happened so far that's been so surprising. I picked them to go 7-5. I think pretty much everybody did. So I'm thinking, you know, you get blown out by Michigan. You come within a drop ball, a bad start of beating Pitt, and you don't do it. And that's disappointing to fans. But the reality of the situation here, I think, is that they're right where most people thought they'd be, and now is where you want to see some improvement. And these are two teams coming up that have played okay so far this year, but you really need to see some improvement from Penn State to be able to handle these two kinds of teams. Because these are, while you don't necessarily think they're going to beat Michigan, you do think they have a chance to beat Minnesota and Maryland.
Right. And Minnesota's a team that runs the ball well, and Widener, to his credit, you know, look, they haven't played Murderer's Row. I got that. I mean, they're 3-0. It's Oregon State. It's Indiana State. They scored in all but two of their drives against Indiana State. I mean, that skews stats left and right when you see something like that. And then Colorado State, decent win. The same Colorado State team that Colorado blew out. So, and they've all been at home.
Yeah.
So, what? Any thoughts on them yet?
No, I don't put too much stock into the schedule they play or the stats because, you know, it's, I mean, here's what I look at. They have, I look at what do they have up front. I mean, they have a pretty decent offensive line.
They're big.
They're big. They're getting better. Matt Limegrover knows them well, obviously.
Yeah.
He coached most, if not all of them. So you're looking at that. Penn State has struggled with big experience offensive line. So they're going to have to find a way, you know, for that, with that defensive line, and honestly to put something together at linebacker, be able to stop the run, because they're going to get the run, and Leidner's a running quarterback, and he's experienced. So I think that's where you look at it if you're, you know, if you're Penn State and say, hey, look, they're dangerous for this reason, because they have a quarterback who could really beat you, and they have some depth at running back. The stats I think you throw out, I mean, my favorite one this year was, what you were mentioning, I think Kent State was ranked in the top 50 in defense in the country last year, but they gave up minus 54 yards to Delaware State or somebody like that.
Right.
And that skews the numbers. So you really can't tell anything based on the numbers, but you got them on film. If you're Penn State's coaching staff, you're going to look at what they do. But I don't think Minnesota's a team that's going to surprise too many people. They're not that different. You know, new coach and everything, but there's not a big difference between Tracy Clays and Jerry Kill. So they've been coaching together forever. So this is the same team, same players, same approach. And it really comes down to, can you play physical enough to beat Minnesota? That's what it really always comes down to against Minnesota. Can you be physical?
What really struck me about them was their running backs do a great job at yards after the contact, 540 out of their 700 total. That's impressive. The offensive line has been hit for no holding penalties in three games, but they've played nothing but home games, and they have 9 false starts. Without encountering this crowd.
That's one thing that doesn't make any sense about them is the penalty situation. And that's going to come into play. I mean, if the Penn State crowd shows up and could be a factor, yeah, you would think you can buy them a couple of yards, you know, here and there. But what you brought up is something I was going to write about this week was the yards after first contact, and that's where Penn State really has to get better on defense. If they're not better than they were against Michigan and even Temple, they weren't that great against Temple. You know, they haven't been a good tackling team in the last couple of years. They're going to have to be more sure of themselves this week. But a lot of the reason they haven't tackled well is, number one, the secondary isn't built that way. These are more cover guys, and number two, the linebackers are different. I mean, this is just not the linebacker before they thought they were going to have.
Not even close. I mean, you worry that you lose one and you have to plug one guy in, not plug everybody in.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened in a situation like this. Trace McSorley, what were your thoughts on his play Saturday and then his reaction after the game?
Yeah, the play Saturday, I thought, was about, again, what I expected. I didn't think he'd play well. I just had that feeling because, yeah, number one, you don't play well every week when you're a young quarterback. And I think he's played well to a certain extent in every game he's played, going back to Georgia. So, you know, I thought to myself, this is a great defense, great talent, and coach who exploits weaknesses. So he's gonna do what he can, you know, defensively. Don Brown and Harbaugh and those guys, they're gonna do what they can to kind of confuse the kid, rush him, and they just overpower him. And I get that. For, you know, the reaction after the game where he sat there and apologized, you know, I Penn State fans are going to love that. Did he need to apologize? No. Absolutely not. I mean, that's a game that Penn State, nobody, I don't think, who had a legitimate, impartial, unbiased perspective thought Penn State was going to win that game and that McSorley would light it up. But I think that's going to endear him to Penn State fans, or it should. Because, you know, here's a guy that, and you love kids like this, you know, kids who don't lose and they don't take it well, and it's an embarrassment to them when they don't win. And I think McSorley deals with that. He reminds me of McGloin in his attitude a little bit, just because, you know, he's got such confidence in himself that he's not going to go out there and accept anything less than playing his best. And he didn't on Saturday. And like I said earlier, you can't play a game. You can't get to where you want to go if you don't, as a young player, have to face a team like Michigan. And I think this game will make him a lot better. The apology was unnecessary. I thought as soon as I saw him walking, and I knew, hey, this guy's a little upset about how he played. But yeah, I don't think there's any reason to be. But I don't think he played super well. But But, you know, like I said, you get better from playing, not playing super well against a good team.
Barkley has fought his guts out in this thing through four games. And I watched a little bit of the Minnesota defense. I sense he is on the doorstep of a big breakout day. What have been your thoughts on Barkley?
Oh, I think, you know, there's been times I thought early in the season he was maybe looking for the big run and not, you know, kind of taking what he had. And I think the last 2 weeks, the Temple game got a little better. But I thought the Temple game, he really played well. And the stats aren't going to reflect that. I mean, I know he got over 100 because of the big run. But I really thought he got what he was given in that game. And that's what a good running back does. He takes what he's given, and then he takes what he can get. The Michigan game, I thought he was outstanding. So I think this kid, he's getting better, and I would agree. And one of these next two games, he's going to light it up. I mean, you know, he's going to be a 150, 200-yard rushing game. He's going to be a force in the passing game. He's starting to get the feel for it. And what's impressed me most is he's been a workhorse. I mean, other than the, you know, the whatever, you know, helmet to the knee or whatever happened to him in the Temple game, I still couldn't tell watching on replay. But I thought staying healthy and staying on the field for him was going to be a big thing, and he's done that. He's really been a workhorse, like you said. And you know, I don't think there's anybody in the country who doesn't look at him and think, "Wow, that's one of the three or four best running backs in the nation." And I would agree with that. And I think he's only going to get better. But you know, I think he's gotten, if you watch it, incrementally better every game this year. And that's kind of scary because he's still got what, 8 games left.
Right.
If he continues on that pace, he's going to be a big season.
Donnie, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Look forward to seeing you Saturday.
I'll be there, Steve. We'll see you.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Back to wrap it up at the moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Okay, obviously not a good day for Penn State Saturday. I mean, Michigan owned the trenches. I mean, that's got to start. You got to start improving there on a weekly basis. Michigan owned the trenches. I mean, like they said, there's nothing about Michigan. I mean, Sean, you were there when I was speaking at Penn's Tavern, and I was asked to run down the schedule. And when I got to Michigan, I said all the same things I said last week, and I said all the things I said on the speaking trail. And there isn't a single thing about that game that changed my mind. I still think their running backs are average. I think their tight end is the best in the country. I think their wideouts are great. I think their offensive line is outstanding, especially center to the right, I think is really good. I think the quarterback's a game manager. I think their defensive line is great. I think Lewis is one of the top five corners in all of college football. And I think their secondary is great. And I think they're, you know, you take Peppers out, because really you're playing a nickel. The two linebackers are average. That's what I saw, and that's what I thought during the offseason. There's nothing that with them that changed my mind about anything. For Penn State, I'll tell you, a young guy that played, got better as the game went each quarter was Cameron Brown. I thought he got better every quarter in that game. Got to get out of the gate. Got to start getting to games where you play with the lead, where you get, you know, it's interesting. Penn State has scored on three of its four drives to start the second half. They haven't scored in a single drive to start the game. They've got to get out of the gate, get to the lead, and get a little feeling out there for what's going on. You know, a positive vibe. McSorley, I don't think, had a great game. He wasn't the only one, but he didn't have a great game. Wideouts have got to get a little better separation. I mean, you look at that, you know, you look at Minnesota, for example. You know how many yards after the catch Minnesota's averaging this year? 3. That's it. So they don't get a lot of separation either. Walatarski really is the number one guy there. You watch Walatarski play 82. Yeah, he's not an awesome wideout. He's a good wideout. But he's the best they've got. Leidner, the quarterback, throws the ball better. Doesn't have a lot of touch on the ball when he throws it, but he throws it on a line. It's not bad. His accuracy's really improved. Good runner, too. Three really good running backs. I mean, getting Smith back in the lineup helped them a lot, gave him a little more jump. Defensively, I think they're okay. They're not really that great. You know, a couple of the secondary guys, Travis Seven's pretty good. Jack Lynn, the one linebacker, is pretty good. Number 50. And up front, nothing to write home about. There's one kid they brought off the bench at the true freshman that had three sacks late in the game, forced fumbles. He might be somebody you got to watch for. But, you know, Colorado State scored on three of their last four possessions in the game.
Has their team made a seamless or as smooth as they can transition from Jerry Kill to Tracy Clays?
Well, it happened mid-season last year, so. Yeah, I mean, it did fine. I mean, they're 3-0. But the Indiana State game really skews every stat that they have. They scored on all but two possessions in that game. So the offensive line is huge. I mean, straight-ahead run blocking, they're really, really tough. But when they have to pull and get in the open field, they get... Might as well play the theme to Chariots of Fire.
So now with Matt Limegrover coaching on this team, what kind of preparation can they do in this game that they, you know, couldn't have done in the past?
Well, he knows all the personnel. He also knows, for the most part, what the offense is. He knows what Leidner likes to throw and what he hates to throw. I mean, there's all sorts of things that he knows that the average person would never know. So are you going to watch the Saints and the Falcons tonight, or are you going to watch the debate?
I may flip back and forth. I would think tonight's game is going to be a lot better than last night's.
Well, I thought last night's game was going to be lousy to begin with, and I got to give it a lot of credit. It totally met expectations. Tonight, look, 80 to 90 million people are going to watch the debate tonight. I mean, Mark Lawrence, to him, this is the Super Bowl.
It is. Countdown is on.
90 minutes, no commercials. About after 9 minutes, I might be aching for one.
Your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunbury.